A day passed without her seeing him, but when Nenyim entered her laboratory, there was the twisted, demented Kay Quad. He'd somehow unsealed the dermal shelf where her experiments were hidden and was stroking her personal casa with the carapace of his right hand. She hadn't tried particularly hard to hide anything, reasoning that doing so was wasted effort. Her modifications to the ship were ample evidence of her heresy. Hiding the experiments would only delay the inevitable.
"Tell me what you're doing, Adept," he said. "Master, I'm only doing my best to heal the ship. If I have strained protocol, it was only because I thought it best for the Yuuzhan Vong."
"Strained it? Strained it?"
He laughed, an unpleasant scratching sound.
"I requested a master because I do not have access to protocol records above the fifth cortex,"
Nenyim went on.
"I had no answer to the Rikyam's dilemma, so I sought one."
"And now you have a master,"
Kaquad chortled.
"And now we shall shape."
"Perhaps Master Kaquad would like to review the damage to the spiral arm."
"Perhaps the master would have his adept listen instead of speak. Today, we are shaping. Recall the protocol of Boa Aqua."
Nenyim stared at him.
"We are to form a Gretchen? But the fleet is replete with Gretchens."
"Inferior Gretchens? Your generation. In your haste to make them stronger, faster, tougher, you have forgotten the most important aspect of shaping. The essence."
"What is that, Master?"
"Form. Have you ever seen a perfect Gretchen, Adept?"
"I do not know, Master."
"You have not! In the mind of Yan Yuuzhan is a perfect Gretchen. You and I, Adept, will incarnate the Gretchen in the mind of Yan Yuuzhan."
"But the Rikyam...
the brain!
How can you even think of such a mundane matter when we are to embark upon this?
Once we have created the perfect Gretchen, do you really expect Yan Yuuzhan, or those simpletons Yun Harla or Yun Nashel, will deny us anything? Now we must work!"
It was soon after this that Nenyim began to seriously consider the murder of Master Kay Quad. "Well," Corin said, studying the changed star chart, "where are we? Are we surrounded again?" Beneath the hood, Tahiri turned her head this way and that, as if looking for something. "Nothing that I see," she said. "There are plenty of ships in the system, most of them around that planet with three moons, but none of them look like Yuuzhan Vong Yorick Coral." "Interesting," Corin mused. "Three moons, huh? Is there a space station near that planet?"
"That could be what that is," Tahiri said.
"From your description, this likely is the Agdul system. Any sense of what the ship was supposed to do once here?" Tahiri nodded in the affirmative.
"Yes, we're supposed to scent the readiness of the enemy."
"So this is a scout ship," Anakin said. "Which means the main fleet will be expecting intelligence from us," Corin concluded. "The question is, how long will they wait before deciding something has gone wrong? Tahiri, can you fake a message? Stall them a little?" Tahiri shook her head.
"No, I'd have to use a villip, which means they would see my face."
Corin pondered that unhappily for a few seconds. "In the meantime, we have to make contact with Yagdul. Any ideas there?"
"Sure," Anakin said. "I can modify the emergency beacon in the survival pack and run it through one of our wristcom units."
"Do it then," Corin told him. A short while later, Anakin returned to the helm, lugging the communication device he had patched together. "The signal isn't that strong," he explained, "so it may take a few moments to tune."
"Get started then," Corin said.
"Why Yagdul, do you think?" Anakin asked Corin, as he fiddled with the gain, focusing on the distant hum of hyperwave noise from farther in system. "I mean, if they want Coruscant, they already have Duro to stage from." "They're closing their back door. Yagdul sits on the intersection of the Rima trade route and the Corellian trade spine. It also gives them a clean shot at Thyfera."
"Oh, Bacta here, he said. Bacta? Right. If they control Bacta production, they control the health of everyone in the galaxy. Or maybe they want to conduct experiments on the given, ready-made sentient beings who can survive in vacuum. Regardless, holding Yagdul gives them a lot more options. Soon, Anakin had a steady feedback response. All right, he said, we're ready. Hail the Planetary Defense Force, Korin said. He closed his eyes, concentrating. Try... He reeled off a quadratic equation, then smiled wearily. It might not be right, but it ought to get their attention. Hailing, Captain, Anakin said. Anakin's rewired comm unit whined and sputtered. Behind a sleet of gravitic interference, the naturally armored figure of a given glowered at them. More than anything, his, her, face resembled a large human skull that had been melted, allowed to sag, and reformed.
Yagdul primary bastion to unidentified Yuuzhan Vong ship, the given said. This is Dodekian Iliad. You will stand down and surrender or be destroyed.
Dodekian Iliad, Korin replied. This is the captain of the Yuuzhan Vong vessel Stalking Moon. We surrender. Wedge Antilles pinched his face in a scowl. Unlike some other things about him, time had only made his glare more impressive. Jaina felt it brush her and shivered, though she knew she wasn't its intended target. That would be Kip, seated between her and Gavin at the roughly finished wooden table. General Antilles, she began, but then the full weight of his anger did fall on her, stopping her cold. You should have told us he would be here, Lieutenant Solo, Wedge said. It was less than honest, and far less than I expect of you. Beyond the rustic stone walls of the hilltop garden and its topiary canopy, the sun jeweled the silver sea with noontime light. After the cramped quarters of an X-Wing, a ranch on Chandrilla was the best meeting place Jaina could have imagined. But that lovely world all but vanished, replaced by Wedge's eyes. She swallowed and addressed Wedge again.
General, I apologize, but I didn't think you would meet with me if you knew Kip was involved. Colonel Darklighter didn't think so either.
General Antilles glanced back up at Kip. Duran, I don't like you, he said. The very best thing you are is a murderer. The very worst...
General, Jaina said desperately. Whatever you may think of Kip, he's discovered something important, something that threatens us all.
Fine, Antilles said, sitting back and brusquely waving his hand. You have evidence of this danger? Let me see it. The sooner this is over with, the sooner I can find some clean air to breathe.
The four of them watched in silence as Kip replayed the hollow Jaina had seen last beneath the frozen surface of an unnamed world. When it was over, the silence continued for some time. It was Wedge who broke it.
Emperor's black bones, he muttered. That was my reaction, Gavin replied. Now you understand why I thought you should see this.
Yes. Yes, I suppose I do.
Wedge straightened and knitted his hands together. But until we see it used militarily...
It would be too late then, General, Kip burst out, leaping to his feet.
Shut up and sit down, Wedge snapped. Let me finish what I was saying.
Kip sat down.
Until we have real evidence that this is a military weapon, we can't go to the Senate with this. Maybe not even then.
Why?
Jaina asked.
Because they won't do anything. At least not right away, Wedge replied.
So you're saying there will be no military mission to take this thing out? Gavin said, outraged.
No official mission, no, Wedge replied.
Then what are we going to do? Jaina asked.
Wedge folded his arms and regarded her for a long moment.
Solo, do you believe what Duran has shown us?
Jaina felt the weight of that question pressing her toward the planet's core.
This is why Kip wanted me here, she reflected. They trust me.
Yes, she said, I believe him.
The general hesitated another few seconds, then held up his hands in surrender.
Gavin, I don't have to ask where you stand on this.
No, sir, General. Rogue Squadron will give it its best shot.
Very well. I'm going to contact Admiral Crefe. I think he will be extremely interested in this situation. Chalk up another one for the Princess of Blood, Han said, lifting a mug of something the bartender had called Corellian Ale, and which was certainly anything but. What's that? That's what, our fifth cargo? Losing count already, Dad? Jason asked, sipping his own dubious concoction. Harsh Tatooine light lanced into the cantina through two windows facing out into the street. You aren't going all meditative on me again, are you? His father asked, with that little quirk in his mouth. No, Jason answered solemnly. I'm all pirate. I pillage, therefore I am. That's the spirit. Han's gaze shifted about uncomfortably, then needled out someplace past Jason. There we go, he said. The rest of our dinner party. Jason didn't turn. One thing he'd learned around his father. If there were only two of you in a place like this, it was best if you weren't both looking in the same direction.
Well, well, a voice boomed behind them. Han Solo. And if I make my guess, one of his spawn.
Hello, Shallow.
I don't believe it. The great Han Solo actually knows my name.
I have a good memory, Han replied. He glanced around the cantina. Looking good. How's business? Shallow finally moved into Jason's field of vision. He was human, about his dad's age, and surprisingly small to have such a deep voice.
Not bad, Shallow said. The Yuuzhan Vong snub their flat noses at Tatooine, so we're the center of commerce out here on the rim these days.
Uh-huh, that's pretty convenient for you, I guess, Han said.
Yeah, well.
Han jerked a thumb toward the man. Last time I saw Shallow here, he was a petty thug at the bottom of Durga the Hutt's food chain.
Solo, you got a point? I'm a busy man. I've heard you're back in business, so to speak. You have something you want moved?
Not exactly, Shallow. I need a little information.
So long as you're willing to pay for it.
Sure, Han said. Like you said, I'm back in business now. He passed 100 credits across the table towards Shallow. Gesture of good faith, he said.
Okay, what do you want to know?
There's a certain shipping concern. I think you know the one I mean. Has certain occupational interests?
I can't say I know what you're talking about. There are lots of shipping firms.
Han leaned forward a little. Ah, come on, Shallow. Who do you sell all your slaves to?
Slaves? I'm not in that business, Solo.
You disappoint me, Shallow. Shallow smiled and shook his head.
No, you disappoint me, Solo. I guess everyone gets old. Now your son pays the price.
Han looked at Jason in mock surprise. You're picking up the tab, son? My boss doesn't pay me that well, Jason replied. Han looked at Shallow. I guess now we don't know what you mean, Shallow.
I mean, there's no bounty in the galaxy higher than the one on your boy here, and I'm collecting it.
A green shaft of light suddenly appeared, jutting out of the tabletop. It terminated a centimeter from Shallow's throat.
Shallow said.
Please don't move, Jason requested. Listen, Shallow, I can wipe out you and your whole petty operation if I want, or you can cooperate.
Hey, Shallow said. Could you please have your Jedi get that thing away from my throat?
Han raised both brows heavenward.
Oh, you mean this Jedi?
My eldest son? The one you were going to turn in for the biggest bounty in the galaxy?
I wouldn't have actually done it,
Shallow explained.
I was going to try to extort protection from you, that's all.
Yeah, right. You're slime, Shallow. And now you're going to give me something.
What?
What I asked for, you backhead.
Oh, the shipping company.
Han nodded. That's right, the shipping company.
There's a convoy coming day after tomorrow, on its way to Yalisha.
What's the cargo?
Oh, you know, cargo. spice, weapons, maybe a few slaves.
Sacrifices for the Yuuzhan Vong, you mean? You're quite a piece of work, Shallo.
I'm a businessman, Solo.
Sure. Tell you what, once we're done with this convoy, we'll come back and drop you off someplace where you can get nice and cozy with your new business partners. Nal Hutta, maybe.
Luke gripped Mara's hand and tried to keep his tears at bay, trying to make his mind still, free of pain, fear, and grief.
Cut it out, Luke, Mara said. You're giving me the creeps.
Her voice was a dry croak. Luke took a shuddering breath and tried to smile.
Sorry, he said. Not one of my better days. It's got to be better than mine, Mara said.
Her hand in his felt papery and hot. He gripped it harder, feeling the disease beneath. It was in furious motion, mutating at rates that medical science had once considered impossible. The only still point in her body was that place where their child floated.
Maybe
it's time to induce labor, he said.
No.
Mara's voice cracked on the word. Her eyelids dropped over her pale orbs.
I told you, she whispered. I can feel it's wrong.
But this is killing you, Mara.
No, really. I would never have guessed.
He felt her fluttering toward unconsciousness.
Mara? Still here?
Mara, you have to let me in.
I can manage, Luke.
Mara, my love, that's my child, too. And you? You're the best part of my world. Let me help.
Selfish, Mara said.
Yes, maybe, Luke admitted.
Meant me,
Mara corrected.
Help our child.
Luke reached into her then, into the maelstrom. He felt how truly feeble her life was. Only Mara had ever been able to control the illness, but her terrific will was too focused now. Her pain racked his body. Her dark fevers gnawed at the fringes of his brain. It was overwhelming, and the most profound sensation of hopelessness he had ever felt shuddered through him. He fought the despair, but it slowly filled him up. He knew in that moment he could never save Mara. She was lost to him, forever. Admiral Trieste Crefay seated himself in the tactical chamber room of his flagship, the Rau Roost. His violet eyes were sternly set, but Jaina nevertheless felt a brief but tangible impulse to stroke his fur, which was whiter than the wastes of Hoth. Contrasted with his black flight suit, it positively shone. It was a feeling that evaporated immediately when the dignified Bothan began to speak. I've reviewed all of the information presented me, he said. General Antilles, is there anything missing? Any other little surprises? No, Admiral, Wedge replied. He glanced aside at Kip. Not that I know of. Well, the general mused, who would have guessed that the Yuuzhan Vong were another pack of superweapon aficionados? I thought we were done with that when we were done with the Empire. Apparently not, Gavin Darklighter said dryly. I share General Antilles' distrust of Kip Duran, but this I'm getting tired of, Kip grunted and stood. If you will excuse me, I'll go destroy it myself, with my lightsaber if I have to. This isn't worth the bother. Oh, Kip, sit down and let Colonel Darklighter finish, Jaina snapped. Yes, why don't you do that? Admiral Crefay said dryly. Kip nodded and returned to his seat. I was saying that Duran and his dozen or so went to what must have been desperate lengths to get this information. What he got is the clearest proof we're going to get that the Yuuzhan Vong are planning something very dangerous indeed. It's my opinion that we ought to do something about it. General Antilles, what do you think? Admiral Crefay asked. Wedge clicked his tongue. I agree, he said. As do I, the Bothan concurred. You see, Master Duran, what another moment of silence would have cost you? Nothing at all. I understand, Admiral. My apologies. Very well. We're agreed, then. The sooner we act, the better, Crefay said.
In 2 days' time, the Yuuzhan Vong will discover that someone in this galaxy still has teeth. I really wasn't designed for this, 3PO said, for something to the power of 100th time. The waiting is really the worst of all. Han checked the console, saw nothing again, laced his hands behind his head, and leaned back. That's so, Goldenrod, he said. Personally, I think it would be worse to have our hull blown open by proton torpedoes. Well, yes, 3PO admitted. That might be, or lose power and life support and drift forever in the cold dark of space. Oh, how horribly vivid. I've reconsidered. Waiting isn't so bad after all. Suddenly, ships began reverting to sublight. Heavy freighters, Han said, sitting up. There's our convoy. Get ready, Princess of Blood. Han, Leia said from the co-pilot's chair. Huh? Han stared where Leia's finger was pointed. A Yuuzhan Vong frigate had just dropped out of hyperspace along with an interdictor. As he watched, coral skippers were already detaching. Well, Han remarked, things get more interesting all the time, don't they? Noma Noor, alone in his sleeping chamber, prodded the gableth masker that gave him the appearance of a Given, and it peeled off. Posing as a Given had more unique challenges than any role he had assumed before, their language not the least. When speaking to one another, they expressed themselves in phrases that more resembled calculus than grammar. Even with the Tizo worm to translate for him, Noma Noor still often tripped on the language. For that reason alone, many of the Given knew who and what he really was. It was only with the help of his local agents that he managed to remain disguised to the rest. Noting the time on the ridiculously complex Given chronometer, he withdrew the box that housed his villip and prepared to stroke it to life. He found it already pulsing for attention, and in a few moments he regarded a facsimile of Commander Kurang La's features.
Is the stalking moon in this system?
Noma Noor asked the warrior. Kurang La's features twisted into a glare.
It should be, but your perfect plan develops clots of blood. An infidel ship jumped into the midst of my fleet. We destroyed it almost instantly, but now we have lost contact with the stalking moon.
I shall discover what troubles, if any, the stalking moon is having, and report promptly back to you.
See you do,
Kurang La snapped. Noma Noor's expression soured as the villip calmed. If something had happened to the advance ship, could he still accomplish his mission on Yagdul? Of course he could. But he smelled Jedi in this somewhere, beyond the lone Rodian who had identified Noma Noor as Yuuzhan Vong when visiting Yagdul Station. It had been easy enough to have him tracked and murdered. Noma Noor sat and composed his ideas carefully. If there were Jedi here, he would be ready for them. Looks like it was built for children, Tahiri commented as the three humans were escorted through Yagdul Station by four Given guards. Corrin had fond memories of the place. It reminded him of his early days with Mirax. The station, which had been Rogue Squadron's base during the Bacta War, was now part of an expanding Given military-industrial complex. Rebels built it during the war with the Empire, Corrin informed her. I've heard it said they made it small to give stormtroopers a hard time if they ever invaded. Soon enough, they were led into the largest room they had seen thus far. It still wasn't very big. The tactical stations and a bank of holoprojectors with various views of the surrounding space made it somehow comforting for Anakin after the Yuuzhan Vong ship. This was tech he was familiar with. The Given waiting for them was not as comforting. Anakin guessed him to be the same one who had demanded their surrender. Dodekian Iliot, I presume, Corrin said. The Given rose. Yes, I am he replied. I am Corrin Horn, and this is Anakin Solo and Tahiri Vela. We've come to warn you, Dodekian Iliot, that a Yuuzhan Vong fleet is preparing an invasion of this system. The ship we were piloting was a scout ship we captured. It was designed to come here unnoticed and contact some faction of your own people. You are Jedi, he said. The Yuuzhan Vong seek you. Yes. Perhaps you tell me this only to save yourselves.
You'll have proof enough when the Yuuzhan Vong show up, Tahiri blurted.
True, the Given said. But even so, what use have they for our system?
We think they wish to stage a strike at Thyfera, and perhaps then the Corps, Corrin said. If you don't fight them, you'll be slaves, Tahiri abruptly interjected.
The decision of whether or not the Given will aid you does not lie with me. But we have taken into account all you have said. Now, if you will accompany my aid, you will be provided with quarters and repast fit for your species.
Are we prisoners? Tahiri said.
I would prefer you did not think of yourselves as such. You have been allowed to retain your Jedi weapons, but I would also prefer you remain confined to the quarters we assign you. The station is delicate. Were there to be violence of any sort, it could well suffer explosive decompression.
I understand, Corrin said stiffly. Anakin did too. It was a polite threat. Try and escape, suck vacuum. That was an equation it didn't take a Given to understand.
Nen Yim found Kay Quad where she often did, clucking over the Grutchen larvae, his useless hands drawn up onto his knees. He did not even glance at Nen Yim as she entered.
I've spoken to the prefect, she said. Ona Shai urges that we turn at least some attention to the functioning of the ship.
That's interesting, Kay Quad said thoughtfully.
He pointed at one of the larvae, indistinguishable from the rest.
This one will have to be destroyed. Its color is off.
Indeed, said Nen Yim.
See to it, Kay Quad said. I must rest now.
You should speak to the prefect, Nen Yim pressed.
What would a master shaper have to say to the likes of her?
Quad sneered.
Nen Yim watched him go, then despondently turned her attention to the larva. She was carrying it toward the orifice to feed it to the Maw Lure when she suddenly understood that she was no longer considering the death of Kay Quad, but was committed to it. Not only that, but she had chosen the method of his death. Grutchens were used to breach the hulls of infidel ships and contained an acid powerful enough to eat through metal alloys. A single bite from one would be sufficient to end the life of her miserable master. So instead of destroying the pupa, she worked her own shaping on it. She removed neurons from the tiny brain of the Grutchen, and with the protocol of Ka, imprinted a simple series of reflexes keyed to the scent signature of Kay Quad, which she obtained from skin cells shed in his quarters. As a failsafe, she made the triggering of the reflexes dependent on a word she herself would utter. When the Grutchens had matured, she would speak the name Mejan, and Kay Quad would die, her new master slain symbolically by her old. A cat later, the Grutchen pupae began to molt. When he saw the small but adult beasts, Kay Quad began to shriek incoherently and sank into what appeared to be a deep depression. Calmly, Nen Yim bore his ranting and whims, waiting until the end of the day when the initiates had been dismissed.
I want all of the initiates killed, Kay Quad said quietly. They are plotting against me.
Nen Yim eyed the Grutchens, an arm's length away. She and Kay Quad were alone now. She need only speak the word. She had taken the breath for it when he spoke again.
No, Nensup. Seductive Nensup. Perhaps I am to blame.
It is my hands, you see. They are not as steady as once they were.
Nen Yim hesitated. She kept the word in her throat and moved nearer, near enough that their bodies were touching.
Master,
she asked,
why is it you do not replace your hands?
He looked down at them.
My hands? Yes, they should be replaced. But it is denied me. Only another master can access that protocol, and none will do it. They are all against me, you know.
I know,
she whispered, leaning her mouth near his ear.
And yet, she said, lowering her voice even farther, you are a master. You could do it yourself.
I haven't the hands to make hands.
But I do, Master Kequod. I do.
You would have to learn the protocol, Kequod replied. And you are forbidden it.
Now her lips were touching his ear.
I might do much which is forbidden, Master, she said.
He looked at her with a vague expression.
Fetch the Concasavillip, he said quietly. I shall give you access. You shall shape me new hands. The perfect Gretchen will not escape us.
A trembling, diminutive triumph quivered in Nenium's breast.
Greeted Jaina with an actinic flare and a shockwave that bucked her X-wing violently. She flinched instinctively, closing her eyes against the glare. Have some sense, girl, she thought, forcing them back open. You're in enemy territory. And about to smack into an asteroid, the same one the coral skipper Gavin Darklighter had just drilled and exploded against. She gnawed hard to port to avoid an identical.
Sticks!
Gavin's voice trembled in fear.
Rogues, form up! We've got plenty of company on the way.
As ordered lead, Jaina said, parading through the irregular bits of the shattered planet, Zerka Roll stretched as far as her sensors could make out. Starboard and above her horizon, the yellow star at the heart of the system was half eclipsed by the outstretched arms of the distant Delphic weapon. Nearer and dead ahead was the more immediate target of Rogue Squadron. The Yuuzhan Vong force nested around the stable hyperspace entry, which was the only way in for the Rao Beast. Kip's dozen were headed straight for the weapon, to scout out whatever forces were guarding the thing. The skips began firing all at once.
Let me dust that off your tail, Eleven.
A quick glance showed Jaina she had indeed picked up an admirer. 12 dropped in behind the skip while Jaina put her X-Wing through a series of convoluted maneuvers. The skip hung right in there. Grounded for too long, she muttered. Then the tag-along flared and tumbled, trailing plasma. Thanks, 12, she said.
Not a problem.
Jaina dropped and rolled down to target another coral skipper. She kept up the spray. Fired quad lasers. Then again on full power, three glowing holes appeared in the skip. It continued along its vector, no longer firing. Jaina wasted no more time on it, but found 12 and dropped back to his port. Let's get that stray, 12 said.
Negative, 12.
Nine's voice crackled.
Reform. We can't get them all and we can't afford to let them separate us for any length of time. As ordered,
12 acknowledged. Four more skips were coming. If we don't get this door open soon, Jaina thought, we'll never get it open at all. The Falcon bounced on the expanding plume of vaporized coral her lasers had just coaxed out of the interdict. Han's view of the massive ship broadened, and also allowed the 15 or so coral skippers on his tail a shot at the Falcon without danger of hitting their mothership. Cursing, Han dived low again and quickly encountered the major problem with that, one he had never encountered while using similar tactics against Imperial Star Destroyers. The Yuuzhan Vong ship opened a void. If Han's reflexes had been a single twitch slower, they would have smacked right into it. He hit the repulsors and bounced again, intentionally this time, hurling the Millennium Falcon into a tight arc that quickly became a circle. The skips followed, in time for half of them to run into a new explosion, this one from a concussion missile. That's better, he grunted.
We're doomed, 3PO noted.
Lock it down. We've seen a lot worse than this.
Might I point out?
No.
The quad lasers were pounding steadily, Jason doing his part. A gratifying number of skiffs had already succumbed to his family's efforts, but they weren't the problem. The big ships were the problem, especially the interdictor.
Okay, Han muttered.
Time for a change in strategy. 3PO, I need your help. Earlier, we noticed an odd radiation signature from one of those cargo pods. Figure out what it is. 3PO moved to the sensor readout.
I'm quite sure I don't know what I'm doing. Nevertheless, I hasten to be of service.
Oh, why didn't I stay with Master Luke?
This is driving me crazy, Tahiri fussed. Not knowing. For all we can tell, the Yuuzhan Vong have already taken over the entire system.
I think there are a few hundred Jedi proverbs about patience, Garin said. Though they all elude me just this moment.
Anakin hardly paid attention to his companions. He was mostly beyond the plain, boxy room they were guests in, riding the Force out through the reaches of the Yagdul system.
They're here, he said.
Who? Corrin asked.
The Yuuzhan Vong. They're in the system. I can't tell anything else. Nothing about how many or how...
He choked off as something new, strong, and terrible struck him in the Force. He gasped, and tears welled in his eyes, spilling down his cheeks.
What? Tahiri said. What's wrong?
Mara,
Anakin managed.
Don't you feel it?
Aunt Mara is dying. And Uncle Luke...
He sprang up from his cross-legged position.
We have to get out of here, now!
He drew his lightsaber.
Anakin, we can't, Corrin said. The Dodekian wasn't kidding when he threatened to decompress the station. The Given can survive in vacuum, remember?
We have to do something, Anakin said hotly.
Anakin, dying on Yagdul Station won't help Mara. We have to keep our heads.
I won't just sit and leave it up to the Given to decide whether we live or die.
As if on cue, a deep tremor ran through the station.
Right, Corrin said. We have to get out of here.
Unhitching his lightsaber, he went to the door. It wasn't locked, and there were no guards outside.
Interesting, Corrin said as the station trembled again. But at that moment, two Given carrying blaster rifles entered through the hatch at the end of the hallway.
Jedi, one said in clipped basic, you will come with us.
We can take them, Anakin said very low.
Probably, Corrin acknowledged, but we aren't going to. Not yet, anyway. He smiled at the Given.
Lead on, he said.
When they reached the command center, they found it in a flurry of activity. Dodeki and Iliad glanced up at them as they entered.
It would appear you were correct, he said tightly. The Yuuzhan Vong have entered the system and are attacking. You three will want vacuum suits. When the Yuuzhan Vong board, we will empty the station of air.
The Dodekian gestured at another Given.
You will find suits in the storage lockers designated Ring 1C of the docking area. My subordinate will take you to them. I regret your position in all of this. I regret further that an attempt was made to bargain with your lives.
They didn't bite? Corrin asked.
On the contrary, Iliad said. I reached a settlement with them. They promised to spare our station if you were turned over to them.
Then why?
I did not believe their promise,
the Dodekian said.
Go. There is a small ship at docking port 12, berth 13, if it has not already been destroyed. I grant you use of it. The rest of our vessels were used to evacuate unnecessary personnel before the attack commenced.
Thank you, Corrin said.
Thank you for your efforts on our behalf, the Given replied.
He looked back at the tactical readouts.
You should hurry.
He didn't look back up.
Nen Yim bathed in a sea of knowledge. Beneath the cognition hood, her expression was one of awe and wonder. She had long since passed the fifth cortex into the realm of the masters. At the outer limits of the seventh and final cortex, she found, at last, the brain. Its making uncoiled for her. She opened herself in turn and absorbed the information, let it fill the places her Va-tumor had burned a place for. And in the end, when her own brain strained at the rush of knowing, she understood at last. The ship was doomed. The brain would die, and there was no protocol to stop it. If the protocols truly came from the gods had not seen fit to add anything to the sum of Yuuzhan Vong knowledge in 1,000 years. There is nothing beyond the seventh cortex, she thought. I have moved to a place the gods have not yet filled. If there were gods, Meishan Quad had denied them. Perhaps. But even as she renewed her doubt, something changed, like a light in the distance, or a tunnel opening. And then she beheld something that could not be there. An eighth cortex. With renewed hope, she moved toward it. The membrane resisted her, filling her with pain that etched along her every nerve ending. This place is forbidden, even to masters, the Kasa told her. It was the first time it had spoken to her in something resembling language, the first time she felt its ancient sentience notice her. She recoiled. Who may come here, if not Master Shapers? Return, the voice said. I cannot, she answered. Breathing hard, Nenyum ignored the voice of the Kasa and pushed forward with her mind, accepting the pain, making it a part of herself. Open, she shrieked. Open to me, Nenyum! Open or kill me! And suddenly, like waters parting before swimming hands, the eighth cortex opened. She looked within, and all hope vanished. She collapsed into her grief and was lost. Light filtering through her open eyes woke her. She tried to move and found her body almost paralyzed with pain. Standing over her, grinning, was Kay Quad.
What did you see, little Nenzap?
He asked gently.
Did you see it all? Are you satisfied now?
You knew, she said.
Of course I knew.
She looked groggily around. They were in the Shaper laboratory.
Meishan,
she said. Nothing happened, except that Kay Quad grinned more broadly.
I suspect that word was supposed to trigger something. The Grudgeon you altered, perhaps? I took the precaution of destroying it.
Something about Master Quad's speech seemed very different.
Clean yourself up, adept, the master said softly. We have a journey before us, you and I.
Where?
She managed to ask.
Why, to see him, of course. Supreme Overlord Shimra. He is waiting for you.
Captain Solo, the Yuuzhan Vong ship is hailing us,
3PO shouted excitedly.
I'll tell him we'll call back, Han replied.
He'd been forced away from the interdictor by seemingly endless swarms of coral skippers. Now the monstrous ship was following them, trying to establish the dub invasive equivalent of a tractor lock. In desperation, Han drove for the freighters, figuring he could at least use the machines. He made the largest of the freighters, dodging its insignificant defensive lasers with ease. But once there, looped around to face his pursuit, a determined snarl on his face. He blinked. There was nothing there. Not a single coral skipper had followed him.
Sir, 3PO said, the commander of the Yuuzhan Vong warship Herua has called his ships back. If we do not answer his hail, he will commence hostilities in 60 seconds.
Han checked his sensor display. He estimated he was outside of the Herua's tractor range. Barely.
Better let me talk to him, 3PO, Han said. I don't think letting them speak to a droid is going to make them any happier.
Indubitably, sir.
Keeping a careful eye on both the viewport and sensor displays, Han keyed on the comm. Harrower, this is Princess of Blood. You ready to surrender yet?
You waste my time with nonsense,
the War Master grated. Hey, you called me. What do you want?
I recognize your ship, and I know that Jason Solo is with you. I want him. Alive. When I have him, you're free to go.
Oh, sure. I'll just put him in an escape pod and send him over.
Dad?
Jason's voice came up from the intersystem channel.
Dad, maybe it's not a bad idea. If I can get him to duel me.
Han ignored Jason and turned to 3PO. You got a read on that radiation signature yet?
Yes, sir, but I'm afraid it's not very helpful. It's very low grade. The cargo pod contains liquid hydrogen enriched with tritium.
Cheap reactor fuel, Han grumbled. I was hoping for a cargo of ion mines or something.
I'm sorry, sir, 3PO said.
Infidel,
Savong La roared.
There is no sign you are preparing an escape pod.
Han's jaw dropped. This guy doesn't have any sense of humor at all. He really thinks... Well, let him think it then. He opened the channel for a reply. Just give me a sec, will you? He is my son, after all.
You have 2 minutes.
Han chewed his lip, thinking furiously. Then swung on 3PO. Jettison both escape pods, right now. Aim them both at the Vong ship. Han cut the engines in and began creeping back toward the freighter and the Yuuzhan Vong ship it nearly eclipsed. 2 escape pods suddenly went tumbling across his field of vision. Hopefully, it'll take him a few seconds to figure out there's no one on board. He fired his forward lasers. Goldenrod, take a deep breath. If this doesn't work...
But, sir, I don't breathe. Of course I... Oh, no!